I hereby call to order the Planning Commission meeting for the City of Aurora Grande. We have a roll call, please.
Chair Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Maravilla?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Here.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Here.
And Commissioner Shiro is absent.
Very good. Thank you. We get everybody to stand and follow Ms. Maravilla in the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm assuming my fellow commissioners have reviewed the agenda for tonight. Any desire to alter, change, amend the order with which we're going to be addressing the items on the agenda tonight? Seeing a negative response on that, we will continue as agendized and carry on. Item five, the next item on our agenda is the opening comments and suggestions for members of the public. Comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission, and members of the public may provide public comment remotely by joining the Zoom meeting utilizing one of the methods provided by the city. If you're online, please use the raise hand feature to indicate your desire to provide public comment. Anyone in the public here tonight, right now, would like to make a comment on an item not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, is there anyone remotely participating that has that desire?
Not at this time, Chair Martin.
Very good. We will close community comments at this time and move on. Any written communications? Were there any written or supplemental communications that we need to be aware of that arrived late at City Hall?
None for this meeting.
Very good. Thank you. The consent agenda. We have two items on the consent agenda. Both of these are approval of minutes. Approval of minutes from the meeting of June 7th and the approval of the minutes from the meeting of August 2nd. I will make a motion to approve the meetings of these two.
Can you split them because I have this?
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have to abstain on one.
That's fine.
So you've got to split them.
Oh, okay. I will split them. Very good.
Thank you.
We will handle these separately. Item 7A, approval of minutes. I will move that we approve the minutes of the June 7th regular meeting.
I'll second.
I have a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
And Commissioner Guthrie?
I'll abstain on this one.
And on approval of the minutes from the August 2nd regular meeting, I will move to approve those minutes. We have a second?
Second.
We have a roll call vote on that item, please.
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Maravilla?
I'll abstain on this one.
Very good. Both items were approved. We have two public hearing items tonight. The first one, 8A, is consideration of amendments to Title 16 of the Aurora Grande Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units, Development Code Amendment 20-001. Mr. Perez,
yep.
I'm expecting you're going to be providing that presentation for us tonight.
I sure will. Thanks, Chair Martin.
Thank you.
And members of the Planning Commission. I am Andrew Perez, your planning manager, and I'm here tonight to present updates to the city's accessory dwelling unit ordinance. So as a matter of background and kind of explaining why we're here, back in October of 2019, housing legislation amending government code section 65852.2 and 65852.22 was passed, which streamlines and encourages the development of ADUs. Some notable changes to the law include elimination of lot size requirements, reduction of setbacks for ADUs, and also an increase to the number of ADUs that are allowed on a single parcel. So the amendments to the ordinance would bring the city's local ordinance into compliance with state law. So it's been kind of a lengthy process going back to last August, in which staff presented a draft ordinance to the Planning Commission as a study session to obtain feedback from both the commission and the public. At that hearing, staff heard feedback with regards to the architectural compatibility standards, design standards for tiny homes on wheels, as well as allowances for short-term rentals and ADUs. At the following hearing on August 17th with the Planning Commission, Planning Commission ultimately recommended that City Council adopt that version of the ADU ordinance, having made modifications to the standards for tiny homes on wheels and the recommendation to prohibit all short-term rentals in ADUs. So the next step in the process was introducing the ordinance to City Council, which happened on February 8th of this year. At that meeting, there was much consideration and discussion around the ordinance, and ultimately City Council did not recommend adoption of the ordinance, but rather directed staff to revise and conduct follow-up research on the following seven items here. The first being separating standards for tiny homes from the ADU ordinance, developing objective design standards with the intent that ADUs resemble the primary dwelling, a prohibition of rooftop decks, evaluate the feasibility and implications of a fee waiver program, explore a prefabricated ADU program, inclusion of a prohibition of ADUs in the front yard, and finally, research incentives for installation of ADUs or solar panels on ADUs. On July 26th, a couple weeks ago, staff responded to each of those seven items and presented the responses to City Council. Each of the seven items were discussed, and the recommendations agreed upon by council were incorporated into the draft ordinance that is being considered here this evening. So going in that same order, the seven items, the first being tiny homes on wheels. So the previous version of the draft ordinance that was presented to Planning Commission last August included provisions for the installation of tiny homes on wheels as a type of an ADU. However, council directed staff to extract those standards from the ADU ordinance, and those will come back as a separate ordinance. But first, we'd take them to City Council for a study session to refine potential ordinance. Moving on to objective design standards. So the state law does allow agencies to develop objective design standards for ADUs. And just as a reminder, objective standards are those that involve no personal or subjective judgment. So for example, a height requirement or a setback are both numeric standards that are uniformly verifiable. So council directed staff to include objective design standards to ensure that ADUs are compatible with existing development on a property. So to satisfy this direction from council, staff proposes the following design standards. The first being that colors of a detached ADU must match the appearance of that on the primary dwelling. Secondly, when a garage is converted to an ADU, the materials replacing the garage door shall match the existing siding of the primary dwelling. It's important to note that so ADUs created under the by right provisions or through use of the city's pre-designed plan program, which is coming along nicely, as well as factory built housing units are exempt from these standards. So state law does not allow the city to impose objective design standards on by right units. And staff thought it was appropriate to not impose standards on pre-designed plans or factory built housing units because those are both less customizable and we don't want to discourage use of those types of units for ADUs.
Can I interrupt you? Excuse me, but would you clarify for everyone here and anybody listening what a by right unit is, just so we have a little more definition on that?
Sure.
Thank you.
I'll read right from the draft ordinance. So the by right provision allows an attached or detached ADU with the size of 850 square feet or 1,000 square feet, if it's a unit with more than one bedroom. That shall be permitted in any circumstance, subject to a maximum height of 16 feet with 4-foot side and rear setbacks and compliance with all building codes. And in the instances with by right provision ADUs, no minimum lot size or lot coverage requirement shall apply. So essentially, objective design standards would only apply to units that exceed the 850 for one bedroom or studio, or 1,000 for two or more bedroom unit. So looking at objective design standards, units proposed in the historic character overlay district would also be subject to design standards above and beyond the couple I've already touched on. And these come directly from the village design guidelines and standards we already have. So for in the case of a second or two-story ADU, the second floor living area shall be set back 5 feet from the ground floor footprint. Window sashes and door frames shall be made of wood or vinyl with the appearance of wood. Similar situation for new and replacement doors. And then the prohibition of fluorescent, neon, or day-glow colors as the predominant shade on the building facade. Next order of business is rooftop decks. Council made the decision that it'd be appropriate to prohibit rooftop decks on detached ADUs, and that's included, that prohibition is included in Section D of the draft ordinance. So council also directed staff to consider the implications of a fee waiver program in which fees would be waived, or building permit fees would be waived for ADUs that are 500 square feet or less. So just as a little informational nugget, building permit fees are dependent on the type of construction. So if a unit is created through the conversion of existing space, it would be less than the building permit fees for new construction. In the instance of a 500 square foot ADU, conversion of existing space to create that ADU would have permit fees of $1,627 for a conversion and up to $4,338 for a new construction ADU. So staff started to weigh the implications of the fee waiver program. We looked at the historical data and looked at the number of building permits issued for ADUs that are less than 500 square feet, going back to January 1st up until June 1st of this year. And over that about 5-year period, 23 permits were issued for ADUs that have an area of 500 square feet or less. And using the range of permit costs, staff estimates that waiving the fees for those ADUs would result in a decrease in revenue for the department by anywhere between $6,800 to $18,200 annually. It is assumed that this amount would increase if a fee waiver program is implemented. I think staff is optimistic and hoping that people would take advantage of that program. So in the program itself, a building permit fees would be waived for ADUs that are proposed at 500 square feet or less when the property owner agrees to rent the ADU to a lower income household for a 10-year period. Property owner would enter into a legal agreement with the city that would be recorded against the property. And then in terms of revenue, money from the city's Inclusionary Affordable Housing Trust Fund would be used to backfill the loss of revenue due to the waived fees. So the program is consistent with the intent of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, the purpose being to increase the supply of affordable housing. The fee waiver program is also consistent with several of our programs from the 2020 housing element. Moving on to prefabricated ADUs, council did encourage staff to investigate prefab ADUs and encourage them as a, another alternative, an option for people looking to add an ADU to their property. So the draft ordinance specifically identifies factory-built housing as an allowed type of ADU. Factory-built housing is defined by the state as residential structures manufactured wholly or partially off-site in sections or in building components which are assembled at the installation site to form part of or most of a completed unit. So all factory-built housing units are reviewed and approved by a third-party inspector that is that's certified by the state's Housing and Community Development Department. So because of that third-party inspector, the city may not require a review of any factory-built housing plans, nor can the city require alterations to a factory-built housing unit. And just to clarify, that's just looking at the unit for building code compliance. If an applicant were to propose a prefab unit, we'd still ask for a site plan showing the location of the unit on the site, as well as foundation details, connection to utilities, and those type of details. So staff and council at our study session both agree that allowing factory-built housing as a type of ADU may accelerate our ADU development and creation due to reduced plan review and construction timelines. Another area that council asked staff to address was ADUs in front yards of properties. So the draft ordinance for the commission's consideration does not allow ADUs except in situations when no feasible alternative exists. The ordinance defines feasibility as whether a by right ADU can be built in a rear yard due to the presence of slope, existing easements, drainage features, or other existing structures. Should an applicant challenge that feasibility determination, it is appealable to the Planning Commission. And finally, looking at solar installation, new detached ADUs are subject to the Energy Code, which requires solar panels to be installed on either the new detached ADU or the existing primary unit on site, whereas ADUs created through the conversion of existing space or factory-built housing units do not require solar. No additional solar requirements are proposed in the draft ordinance, and staff is only able to identify really federal tax credits as an incentive to offer applicants looking to install solar. So looking at the next steps and where we go from here, should Planning Commission make a recommendation to City Council to adopt the ordinance, staff will introduce the draft ordinance to City Council at the next City Council meeting in September. And then the following meeting after that would be an adoption of the ordinance by City Council. And then the ordinance would go into effect 30 days after the adoption hearing. So looking at late October at the earliest. Upon adoption, staff will send the ordinance to HCD for determination of compliance that HCD will make. And then, as I mentioned earlier, regulations for tiny homes on wheels will return to City Council at a separate study session, hopefully later this year. So tonight's hearing was a public hearing notice was published in the Tribune, the city's website, and posted at City Hall. And the agenda and staff report are also available to the public per Government Code Section 54954.2. So in conclusion, staff does recommend that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution recommending that the City Council adopt amendments to the ADU ordinance. That concludes our presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Ms. Miravilia, do you have questions for staff on this item?
Yeah, just a couple of questions. So you had said that the objective design standards only apply to units like over 850. Did I get that wrong?
So if they don't meet the by right provision, so that is an ADU that exceeds 850 square feet if it's a studio or one-bedroom unit, mm-hmm. or more than 1,000 square feet.
If it's a two-bedroom or something. So let's say you have, like, a unit that's, one-bedroom or whatever, under 850 square mm-hmm. feet. That is a by right then, correct?
That's correct.
So wouldn't that, like, apply to most, like, garage conversions?
It would, yes.
So, but the garage conversion, like, with the coverings is not a, it just doesn't make sense to me if that's part of the objective design standards, but most of the garage conversions will probably be by right, so they won't have to submit to the objective design standards, right?
Yeah, most.
Okay, I'm doing this game of like chess in my head. Like, I it seems like most of them are going to be excluded anyway, so I'm not even sure why we're putting it in there, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just my thought process on that.
Yeah, you're correct that most would be exempt from that,
okay.
that standard.
Okay. And that would be most all junior ADUs too, correct?
Yes, because all J ADUs
are basically exempt from any of the objective design standards.
Yeah, because a J ADU by definition is 500 square feet or less and created through the conversion of existing space.
Which would most likely be a garage in a lot of cases.
Most likely.
Okay. Sorry. Just needed that clarified. My brain was doing a lot of a double time on that one. Okay, so for the fee waiver thing, which is great, I'm so excited that we're doing that. I think that'll be really helpful. If the property owner doesn't like rent it physically to someone, but like their kids, and they don't like take money for it, do they still qualify for the fee waiver, or do they have to physically get like actual money from them?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the fee waiver program in itself won't be codified. It will be a policy that's adopted by council. Okay. And so we're still working through some of the details with that. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a good answer for you right now, but it's a really good point and something we'll consider.
Yeah, I would love to see that kind of considered in there, because I can see a lot of people, like, you know, if they have like a 23-year-old kid, like saying, hey, I'm going to convert my garage into an ADU for you. And then this can help them in that process too.
Yeah, I think in theory, you know, you're creating a unit that is, you know, less than market rate,
right?
Even if it is free and for a family member, so the city sees benefit. You're creating a new
housing
unit that meets a need.
Cool. And then just for the front yard ADUs, if they appeal to us, is there a cost associated with that?
Yes. So the guidance from HCD is very clear that the applicant bears those costs.
Okay. And is it like thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars? Or
it would be our typical appeal fee to Planning Commission, which I believe is right around $500.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Guthrie?
Just following up on the permit fee. So we're actually going to reimburse ourselves from the trust fund, from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And based on the email that we exchanged, you verified with the state that they'll approve it even on a 10-year, that they'll allow us to count that as one of our affordable units, even on a 10, when it's only got a 10-year requirement.
We haven't verified with the state, but when the ADU ordinance is adopted, we're required to send it to HCD for feedback and, you know, verification that it complies with state law. So, we could proactively send that question to them.
I'm going to suggest that. I mean, they do require 40 for almost everything else, and to have a 10-year here, and it's a small unit anyway, I just don't want us to sort of promise something that we then can't deliver. Or we have to deliver. Well, yeah. You said it's a policy, so it's not the same as it being in the ordinance.
So our standard affordable housing agreements are for 30 years, and then the 30-year clock is refreshed when the property is sold or transferred. So a lot of them end up being affordable in perpetuity, but that's the current system.
Okay. So if they sold the house, then is it your intent that this 10-year clock would start again?
Yeah, I don't think it would be the case here, because the, you know, the trade-off isn't as great as
in other situations. Okay. And so there would be some fees with a factory built unit anyway, but it would be just like the siding fee and the electric hookup.
Yeah, it'd be very minimal.
Okay. And then I did watch the council meeting, and they made a point about, remember, we were going to allow a third unit, I think, in our proposal that we, you know what, I'm mixing it up with the SB9. Never mind. Those are my questions. Thanks.
Mr. Buchanan?
Yes, just a couple of questions. It seems like there might be a gap in the pre-approved plans, where there will be sizes ranging up to 1,200 square feet, which won't be by right. And I'm trying to recall from the presentation there, are those going to be flexible enough to meet the objective design standards, or is there going to be, or is that going to limit the application of those pre-approved plans?
The pre-approved plans will be customizable in terms of color, in some instances siding, but the ordinance does specifically exempt use of the pre-approved plans from the design standards.
So
we don't want to discourage
another
that work effort.
Tangent to my question is that I wasn't sure if it was objecting all sizes of pre-approved and prefab or just the by right sizes.
The way it's written right now, it'd be all sizes.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, that answers that first question. Thanks. And then, so objective design standards D, where ADUs are located within the front yard setbacks in accordance with section D3C, objective design standards shall apply. I'm just trying to parse that. Are we saying it will apply even if they are by right in the front yard? Or what's the purpose of, I'm trying to figure out the purpose of including that specific provision in here.
You're talking about the by right, yes, the, where are we, 6D, yes. Yes, so the requirements for ADUs in the front yard would require, I believe we're basically saying that the by right provisions, the front yard requirement still applies for by rights. So you would still need the feasibility provision even if you're a by right.
So if it's by right but not feasible in the backyard, is that
correct,
what you're saying? Then it goes in the front yard.
Right.
But then you're saying it also needs to meet objective design standards if in the front yard?
Yes, I believe that's correct. I don't believe we... I think because there is a feasibility requirement for the front yard that we can apply the objective design standards to by rights that are located in the front yard.
Okay. All right. Got it. Don't really have any comment on that. Was just trying to make sense of what that meant. I mean, possibly, if anything, that could be maybe worded clear. But and then on parking, I believe this was clarified in previous meetings, but I'm just going to re-ask it again. So in a typical single-family home setup where you have a two-car garage and a driveway that can accommodate two more cars, adding an ADU, would one of – so there's – under this, there's potentially four spots there. Does there still need to be a spot constructed with an addition of an ADU in that setup, or no?
No.
No, okay. All right. I think those are all my questions.
Okay. Thank you. I have a couple of questions myself. Back on the fee waiver program, it talks about the agreement that unit will be rented to lower income households. Do we have a definition on lower income households that we're going to be working with?
Yeah, we'll use the San Luis Obispo County's affordability standards. So low income households are those that earn, I think, up to 80% of the area median income. And those Income limits are published on a monthly basis by the county, so we rely on those numbers.
And so there's going to be either a registration. How are we going to be monitoring that? Is it, it comes back to enforcement, the fun devil in the details on that one.
Yeah, so with our existing affordable units, they all have a similar agreement, a buyer's occupancy and resale agreement, and there's provisions in there for annual check-ins with property owner and certain disclosures to ensure that the affordability is maintained. And so we'll carry those over into the ADU fee waiver program.
And if I can make a suggestion, we may want to make an amendment of some kind in addressing Commissioner Maravilla's point. If I want to build, or someone wants to build an ADU on their property and make it available for a family member at virtually no cost, the way this reads, it's really designed to be rented to a low-income person. Now, my 23-year-old son may qualify as a low-income person, but I think maybe, you know, clarification to be, you know, having that ADU or that, you know, structure, that unit available for, I'll just, you know, I don't know how to do that technically, but, you know, for family use or no-cost use, that they wouldn't disqualify that unit if it's being used for a family no cost or no income purposes.
Yeah, we will definitely pursue that.
The other thing that I have, when we get back to the prefab ADUs, the way it reads is that residential structures manufactured wholly or partially off-site in sections or in building components that are assembled. And so if I've got a prefab unit, you know, factory built housing that is partially fabricated and partially custom, is would that custom aspects or the aspects would come under a permit and permit review and the, you know, construction, you know, building department design review?
Yeah, I think if there are any alterations to the you know, the third party approved and reviewed unit, then those would be subject to review by our building official.
I know there's quite a bit of speculation on what may or may not happen at some point in the future, but it'll just be interesting to see how these prefab structures appear here locally and how much customization is desired or requested or designed in, you know, by local applicants. For me, the goal would be, how do we keep those permit fees as low as we possibly can, but we also want something constructed that's going to meet code.
So yeah, of course.
The last item I have, it goes, and this is on page 12 of the resolution under conditions. And I'm just got a little bit confused. This is, an ADU shall not be sold or otherwise conveyed separate from the primary residence. And I'm wondering, isn't this, was it Senate Bill 9 or something about lot splits and things of that nature? Is this in conflict with that, or this is separate from that? I was under the impression that if I could build an ADU and at some point that would be, that lot could be split, you know, if it meets the criteria. And this is, doesn't seem to be addressing that.
So with our adopted SB9 ordinance, it does require the construction of a two-unit development with in conjunction with the lot split application. So I think that requirement would trigger the need for a second unit where there's already an ADU. So you know, that would somewhat make this provision irrelevant. Because you would have, you know, it would be conveyed separately, but through an approved ordinance also.
Through a different process.
Does that make sense?
I guess I'm still a little bit confused. So,
and yeah, I guess it kind of goes to the provision that an ADU can't be accessory to nothing. So an ADU has to exist with a primary to be defined as an ADU.
Okay, I understand that.
So, as Andrew kind of described, you would need to have a primary unit. There could be, a possibility where then the ADU is converted to the primary, and then you have another ADU on
on that same lot. But really, this goes to not allowing you to, if it's an ADU, divide it off on a separate parcel, basically.
So we're differentiating by definition a secondary unit and an ADU for lot splittability or lot split potential?
That's generally correct, yes.
Okay. I'll accept that, I guess. I know that there's, at some point in time, there's an applicant's going to come forward, and if we can clarify stuff now, or as much as we possibly can now, it's going to make it easier downstream for staff, I think, to deal with it. So that's what I'm looking for.
Could I just follow up on
that? Sure, please.
I just want to follow the scenario through. You have a home with an ADU. 5 years later, you decide you want to do an SB9 split. Can the ADU then, through the SB9 split, become the primary unit on the second lot? Or would they have to build a second unit in order to meet the SB9 rule? You understand what I'm saying? They have an existing building that is in other words, they're not going to bring in a new unit because the unit exists when they're doing the SB9. So I'm not clear on what you're saying. Could they do that? Could they do a straight split and say, here's the old primary is this house, and now the ADU is going to be the primary on the SB9 split lot?
Yes, but I think the trigger with that also is that it's a two-unit development, so you have to come in with a second unit. You could make the ADU the primary, but you'd have a second. I believe we require a second unit as part of that split.
Okay, that's not the way I heard it when we passed it, because you could do a split and just build one home on each lot, I thought. I don't think you're required to do two. You can do up to two units, but I don't think you're required to do two units.
I think looking at this again,
the catch was you have to come in with a plan that says here's the units. You can't just say I'm going to split the lot. I get that, but you.
Yeah, looking at this again a little closer, I think once you propose an urban lot split through SB9, it kind of takes you out of the AD ordinance. So, it's a different development path. So this is just
process.
It's a different process, different path. This just prevents the sale of an ADU without a lot split or any other subdivision of existing property.
And I don't want to disagree with that. And I think that to me, I think that's a clear description of what the intent is. And part of it for me goes back to the conversation we had when we were talking about the lot splits in SB9 on the separate utilities. Under this ADU ordinance, there's no requirement for separate utilities. The ADU could be served by the electrical service and a water service and gas service off of the primary residence. And since you get into a lot split, it just becomes a lot more complicated because now we have two different parcels. And how are we getting, how are we metering services, and how are we, allocating those services if it's a shared meter? So for me, it's clear, but the issues around separate utilities and lot splits, there's a potential, I think, for downstream issues arising out of this. So.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And you can throw access onto that list of potential issues as well.
Correct. Okay, any other questions at this point? If not, I'm going to open public comment on this item. And if there's anyone sitting here in our audience that would like to address the commission on this recommendation and this item, you're welcome to come to the podium at this time. Mr. Holub, is there anyone online that is interested in commenting on this item?
I'll let AGP handle the public comment portion of the meeting.
Very good. Thank you.
If you'd like to make a comment, please raise your hand. And if you're calling by phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. In the absence of public comment, I will close the public comment period for this item at this time. Bring it back to the commission for any closing comments and any other observations before I seek a motion on this item? Mr. Buchanan?
Yeah, I just have one comment. So 6C, I just feel like that maybe should be clarified a bit more, because the more I stare at it, it doesn't seem to be conveying the intent there. It says ADUs created under the by right provisions of this section are exempt from the objective design standards, including ADUs with pre-approved plans and factory-built housing. When I read that, it makes it seem like that is saying ADUs and pre-approved plans and factory-built housing that meet the by right provisions are also exempt. And I would just hate for that to get misconstrued further down the line, where it seems like what we're intending to say is ADUs created under the by right provisions, ADUs with pre-approved plans and factory-built housing are exempt from the objective design standards. Unless I'm still misinterpreting the meaning there. But that was my only change that I wanted to recommend here.
Okay, Mr. Guthrie?
I was going to say we might just change including to in addition. Might solve that.
That would work too.
Yeah. I just had a comment that I'm looking forward to ADUs. This was something in my younger days when I lived in Santa Barbara. ADUs were the way to, you know, the people who were lucky enough to get an ADU were the ones who had it made, and I was one of those lucky ones. I'm also really encouraged that we in fact have three council members who already have ADUs and a fourth one who was the biggest advocate. So I just have high hopes that this is actually going to have an impact. So those were that comment. I just wanted to get that in there.
Very good. Ms. Mervilia?
I also really am feeling the same way, Jim. I think this could be a really great, you know, way to get these things going and everything. I would just really recommend cleaning it up a little bit more, just in terms of language. Just, I know I was kind of confused reading it. I'm going back and forth and going, okay, what is exactly by right meaning on this? What does that include? Why is this over here, even though this might be by right? So just cleaning up the language a little bit so you guys don't have a lot of problems when people are coming in and trying to actually do these things would be really helpful. And then just what I had mentioned with the family member, you know, renting a unit and everything like that. I'd love to see that kind of put in there as well. But great work.
Thanks.
And, year and a half long.
And just kind of FYI as well, we hope that people will probably access this through more of a brochure website, which will kind of, you know, create a little more user-friendly interface. But obviously, we want to have the ordinance read properly so that there's no confusion about that. But hopefully, they'll be interfacing with something that's more user-friendly.
Well, and then you have a grant to do that, it looks like, too, which is another great thing. So
that's correct.
Yay.
I don't have any other comments to make on this other than to agree with the fellow commissioners that it's a long, tough process, and it's nice to see it finally coming to fruition. With that said, I will I'll make the motion to approve the resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande recommending the City Council adopt ordinances approving Development Code Amendment 20-001, amendments to Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding accessory dwelling units, with the two, I'm going to say, amendments or two changes or two additions or clarifications. One is on item 6C, around just, you know, the wording clarification on the pre-approved plans. And I didn't see it within the resolution, but within the prior notes about the fee waiver program that we have, you know, clarifying comments about zero income use for an ADU. Those are the only two changes that I'm recommending. Specific changes or additions that I'm making at this point. we can have a second, we can open up for other changes or amendments.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Are there any other comments or changes that people would like to make at this point? Okay, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you very much. Great work to everyone involved. We did a lot of work on it. I know City Council did a lot of work on it. Staff, I know, did a lot of work on it. The next item on our agenda is a consideration of development code regarding permanent parklet programs. Mr. Holub, do you have a comment presentation on this item for us tonight?
I don't have a presentation for you, but staff is needing a little bit more time to incorporate some of the changes and the feedback that we received from the ARC regarding the objective design standard. So at this time, we're recommending that the Planning Commission open the public hearing to allow any members of the public to provide their feedback, and then we will bring that item back before you for consideration at a later date, which we are recommending be a date certain of September 6th.
Very good. Thank you very much. I will hold off requesting commissioners to make a comment, but I will open up for the public for public comment here on item 8B. If there's anyone from the public, either here or online, that is interested in making a comment on the Development Code Amendment 22-003 regarding permanent parklet program here in the community, now is the time to do that. Someone in the public here interested in making a comment on that? Is there someone online? Is there anyone online that is interested?
If you'd like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Chair Martin, we have no raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. We will close public comment, and this item will be continued until the September 6th, 2022 Planning Commission meeting.
I'll second that.
Are we required to take a vote to continue that item?
I'm sorry.
We are?
Yeah, I think it'd probably be okay. Warranted, yes.
I'll entertain a motion. I'll do all the motion.
Okay. I'll move that we continue the hearing to a date certain of September 6th.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. We have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Very good. Follow by the rules here. Play by the rules. My agenda says no non-public hearing items. Is that correct on the agenda tonight? The last item we have are the administrative items that have been approved and reviewed by staff since our last meeting. Any comments or questions from the commission on this item?
I do. I noticed we have, four homestays on here. In our process, do we verify owner occupancy at this time?
So based on the results of our last meeting regarding the short-term rental ordinance, we reached out to our city attorney requesting that he draft language for us to incorporate an affidavit into that owner occupancy requirement. We don't have that language drafted yet, and so we haven't quite implemented it yet, but we are anticipating incorporating that into our process moving forward.
And so these four homestays, two of which are on Ide Street, are they going to have to go back and sign that, or are they – I realize it's in there, but just from the, from the enforceability standpoint, are we going to go back and verify that at that time?
I wouldn't imagine that for these particular approvals. I think that we're gearing toward that change towards the new ordinance. I happen to have spoken with the applicant on those three on Ide Street, and they do occupy the home for one of them. The other one is they are hoping to get an approval in place without using it as a rental at this time.
Okay.
But the applicant on that particular permit also is not the homeowner. So they were applying on behalf of the homeowner who happened to be a family member of theirs.
Okay. So if they're not planning to be an owner-occupied homestay, how do they meet the intent of the ordinance, which says that
when the that not just the new ordinance, the old ordinance, how did they meet that requirement?
So they would be, based on the performance standards, only able to rent that unit while the owner of the property was occupying it. So they could have the approval and not use it, as some folks in the community have approvals for. But essentially, they would not be able to rent that unit unless the owner of the property was renting, was living in the home while renting it.
But we also said apparently this applicant is not the homeowner, but related to the homeowner?
That's my understanding, yes.
So it's part of the application process doesn't require that the homeowner be the applicant, that anybody can be an applicant?
They need to have approval from the homeowner to apply for the permit. So, yeah, the homeowner needs to approve the application, but a representative, like in many other projects, could apply on behalf of a homeowner.
So I could apply for Ms. Maravilla to make her house a homestay as long as she has signed a statement saying that she's approving it?
Essentially.
Okay. That's okay. I'm looking at this and say, well, the homeowner's going to be there, but the applicant's not the homeowner.
Is it the same ownership on all three homes? As we were told last time,
it's not exactly the same ownership, but they are all in the same family. So there's the individual applicant is the owner of the property at 506, 504 Ide Street. And then the ownership for the other two properties actually is a family member of theirs, but they are acting as the emergency contact for the vacation rental and then as the applicant for the other homestay down the street.
So when you say a family member, so in other words, the same owner would be, is it the same owner for the two homestays? In other words, they can't be owner-occupied. So those are two separate owners for the homestays.
Correct.
And in order to rent them out as a homestay, those owners who don't live there now, or one of them does not live there now, would have to go back and occupy the home.
That's correct. Otherwise, if there was indication that they were renting that unit and not living there, then we would pursue enforcement towards that rental.
And that indication would be complaint-driven, I guess.
Complaint-driven, right, as well as I can provide a slight update on our RFP for a host compliance company. So we reviewed the RFPs that were submitted. We received a total of five. We reviewed those and ranked them and plan to schedule interviews with the top three proposal companies later on this week, early next week. But our understanding is each of those companies that have proposed to us would have the ability to verify whether or not those units are being rented. And then in addition, be able to pull information from the listing to determine the number of bedrooms, the number of nights.
And they could determine whether, when you say that they're being rented, but that they're also owner-occupied while they're being rented.
Correct, yeah. We have not yet contracted with any of those companies, but we have, based on the proposals, have some leeway what to require in the listings. So that could be one of the mechanisms we use, is to require that those owner-occupied listings specifically state that in the other listing on whichever website they use.
So would this have been a common practice that if there was an applicant who didn't currently occupy the building but was applying for a homestay, that we would go ahead and approve it on the assumption that they were now going to leave their current home and go and stay here whenever they rented it as a vacation or as a rental unit? That's a common practice?
It's not very common. I personally only aware of one other situation where this occurred. And in that case, we contacted the property owner and it ended up in the withdrawal of the application. So as far as I'm aware, this is the only one that's gotten to this stage of approval. But based on the current regulations and our municipal code, it appears to be something that someone could do.
And it's going to be that, coming back to enforcement, these monitoring companies will be able to differentiate between a homestay and a vacation rental. My fear is that all three of these potentially could become vacation rentals. And my gut guess is, without taking my tape out to the street, is that three vacation rentals on Ide Street, and I think there's already another one on Ide Street that's been approved, we're going to start tripping over each other. And my concern is that we're going to have a homestay that functionally is going to be used as a vacation rental rather than a homestay.
Yeah, I also want to clarify that each of these three properties also currently have, before the approvals being reported on this agenda, have already been approved previously to operate in the opposite fashion of what they're being approved for tonight.
So are they going to lose their rights under the opposite?
Correct. And we've conditioned each of those three approvals. So they are going from two vacation rentals and one homestay to two homestays and one vacation rental. So each of the previous approvals have been invalidated based on the fact that they can't have, if all three of them didn't change, they'd have some, one of them would be within 300 feet of another of the same type.
Okay. Hopefully the recommendations we have made to the short-term rental ordinance will clarify some of the issues that we're bumping into on this. But by definition, under the current ordinances in the city, these three locations would qualify for this change of use or qualify for two homestay permits and a vacation rental permit.
Yeah, so the two homestays, I'm sorry, are about 360 feet apart from one another.
Okay.
With the vacation rental sort of in the middle. So based on the current ordinances and the current buffer distances, they are eligible to be homestays and a vacation rental in the middle.
And then clarify for me and my fellow commissioners, please help. On our recommendations, did we not recommend that this, I think it was, didn't we change it to 500 feet? Mm-hmm. And that both this 500-foot separation would be inclusive of both vacation rentals and homestays. Was that true or is that not true? Did we keep those two separate?
We did keep them separate.
We kept them separate.
Yeah, we didn't change, if you remember, the direction from council, not that we had to follow it, was they didn't want to touch the homestays at all. And that we did, the only thing that I remember we did was that we made sure that the language, some language, now I've forgotten whether it was a 300-foot buffer, but that the language was common, the description of the language was common to both of them. So I think we made them both 500 feet.
Right.
Yeah, I think the way that it's phrased in the minutes has to do with the fact that performance standards for vacation rentals shall also be incorporated into changes for homestays. And so based on those comments we've incorporated in the draft ordinance for council's consideration in September, buffer distance of 500 feet. But Jim's correct that it would be 500 feet between homestays or between vacation rentals. I think based on the draft ordinance and the feedback we've received, you could still have a situation with a vacation rental within 500 feet of a homestay.
Right.
And then if I can, so just to verify, under the current ordinance, we can still enforce the owner occupancy. It just makes me really uncomfortable that we're approving something, you know, that isn't true right now. That's true. You could be building a new house that's going to be occupied, and I suppose you could do this. But if, in fact, there's no owner occupancy, we have the ability, even though this is going to be by right and probably grandfathered in, we could go back and insist on owner occupancy.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Part of the performance standards and the condition of approval for this particular approval require that the owner be on site while renting it. There's nothing in the current ordinance that requires somebody to ever rent a unit they have an approval for. So essentially, it would only be something that comes into play if or when they rent this unit.
Okay. All right. I will say I'm uncomfortable. I don't see any grounds for appeal.
And the other thing I think we tried to clarify, and I'm not sure whether they did it for both short-term rentals and homestays, was that under the proposed ordinance that if a residence was a rental, was an income, long-term rental property, they couldn't convert it to this unless it had either been vacant or a change in ownership. Is that correct?
Yeah, that feedback was also incorporated into the draft ordinance. And then along with all the other points that we've added, we are still working with our city attorney to verify that we can enforce those.
Okay.
But that is definitely something we've incorporated into the draft based on your feedback at the last meeting.
And that does not exist today. So in reality, one of these homestays, the one that's not being currently occupied by one of the owners, could be a rental income, and they could convert it to a homestay if the owner vacated a long-term renter and returned as a occupant to the property and then rented out a homestay unit or homestay bedroom or something within that property.
That's correct.
And at least it's not changing ownership or something. Anyway, it is.
Just a general question. Are there a lot more vacation rentals and homestays in the works? I'll admit these are all the reason there's so many homestays is three of them are same location, but did you guys have a sense? Are there another five coming in the next 2 weeks?
Probably going to be fairly consistent, like we've had for the last few meetings. I believe that I'm processing probably about three or four. Short-term rental applications, can't quite break down the numbers on which type, but there are definitely going to be some more probably on their next agenda being reported.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Those are only questions, comments that I have. I think it might be appropriate to open it to the public to comment on this, to see if there's an interest in making any comments on this item. Is there someone from the public? The public is open. Welcome. Please introduce yourself. You've got your 3 minutes if you need to. Or, thank you.
Kevin J. McCarthy with the 222 Gardner Street right around the corner from I. And I apologize to you for not being really briefed on this topic. I just got this notice in the mail on Saturday about the 528 I Street application. And my concern, I do a lot of walking in the village. I walk from home to the post office and miners and so on. My concern is that, you've heard this before, I'm sure, that there are numerous older homes,
some of them in very poor repair, that are being bought up and converted into rental units, which I'm fine with. And I'm, you know, I'm fine with, you know, the, what do you call it, vacation rentals as well. It just pains me, though, to see all of these homes being bought up, and I'll call it corporatized, you know, by individuals or groups, LLCs and so on, that then monopolize the market, essentially. And I don't think that, I mean, it's certainly helping the people who are profiting by that, but I don't think it's helping the housing situation. And again, I'm not well briefed on the ADU issue. My concern with ADUs is that they'll be let out as, and maybe there's something in the ordinances about that, but that they'll be let out for short term and rentals as well. So again, today when I spoke to you, sir, the and reviewed the things online, the issue was enforcement, and that there may be 150 to 200 illegal or non-compliant rental units in Arroyo Grande. And the question is, who's going to enforce it? So I'll just finish by saying that I'm all for an individual agency who would take that on. And how do you pay for that? I would say the first thing would be to look at finding the people who are out of compliance and trying to remedy things in that fashion. But again, I'm just concerned about all of these places being turned into what do you call them? Vacation rentals, short-term vacation rentals. So thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you very much. Is there anybody online that may be interested in addressing any decisions?
If you'd like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to close public comment period on that, and I think that's probably close it for the evening. Any commission communications at this point? Anyone would like to share, or any staff comments and communications?
No staff communications tonight.
Okay, very good. At that point then, I think it is 7:03. This meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation tonight.